Let's celebrate our wetlands. After all, May is American Wetlands Month. It was established way back in 1991 by the EPA to help Americans understand the value of these wetlands, which not so long before that we would just fill in. And there were some consequences as a result of that. So let's celebrate our wetlands. Our guest, Katie Belfus, is the Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. And if you've got a question about our wetlands or want to celebrate them, you can join our conversation by calling us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send us an email anytime, talk@wpr.org. Katie Belfus, thank you so much for joining us today.
I'm so glad to be here. Thank you so much, Lee.
Yeah, let's start with the American Wetlands Month. Why did we first create this way back in 1991? What's the importance of it?
Well, wetlands are important for so many reasons. But as you said, we have had a long cultural history of not appreciating wetlands and actually actively working to get them out of the way because they were seen as wetlands that didn't contribute to our development as a nation or our ability to carry out our lives. So the establishment of American Wetlands Month is partly just to change that narrative and to help everybody understand why wetlands are so important and how they matter to the things that they care about, like clean water and wildlife habitat and flood protection. So a great opportunity to talk about those benefits.
Yeah, the wetlands are an incredible filtration system, aren't they?
Indeed, they are. They provide places for especially floodwaters to spread out and slow down and release their sediments, drop so those sediments drop out and don't go along into your lakes and fill them up with sediment, but also processing the nutrients that are so often found in our waters. Many of the wetland plants are able to take up and process those nutrients, help clean the water.
Katie, what's the story of the Wisconsin Wetlands Association? Give us a brief history.
Sure. Well, the Wisconsin Wetlands Association is more than 50 years old. It was a volunteer organization for many years. We've had staff since the late 90s, early 2000s. And we have been working to help people and communities care for wetlands through outreach programs and policy and advocacy work and education. So we help landowners know if they have wetlands on their property, what kind of wetlands they are, how to determine if they're healthy, how to take care of them and make them more healthy. We work with local communities who are struggling with water quantity or water quality challenges, try to bring wetlands, the piece of the solution that wetlands can bring to their challenges. And we work with state agencies to help them have programs and funding sources that help promote the protection and restoration of wetlands across Wisconsin so we can be more effective.
And speaking of promotion, there is an event tomorrow in Madison. Tell us a little bit about it and invite us out.
Yeah, we're just having a fun celebration of American Wetlands Month. It's going to be at Delta Beer Lab in Madison, which is just off the Beltline at Rimrock Road. It's 4 to 7 p.m., so come on down after work, and we'd love to have you.
And so I was thinking maybe the event would be held in some wetlands and you'd need to bring your waders, but no, it's going to be at the Delta Beer Lab, which makes more sense now that I think about it.
We do have a lot of events that we hold in the field as well, and we love getting out in wetlands. So stay tuned. We'll do some more field trips later this summer that we'll promote on our website.
We'll give you a reason to put on your waders. You mentioned healthy wetlands, and I want to know from your perspective what an unhealthy wetland looks like and what work is done to help restore that?
That's a great question. And often one of the things that tells us a wetland is unhealthy is the presence of invasive species or the development of sort of a monoculture, which often involves invasive species, but doesn't always have to be. Healthy wetlands are really diverse, have a lot of different plants, flowers and grasses and shrubs and sedges and all kinds of wonderful things. And when a wetland is less healthy, that diversity tends to go down, and we see more invasive species, including reed canary grass and Phragmites, and even cattail, which a lot of folks consider sort of cattails ubiquitous with wetlands, right? That's your very image of wetland is cattail.
And right.
In Wisconsin, we have a native cattail, but we also have an invasive cattail, and they have come together to make a hybrid offspring that's really, really aggressive. And so often when you see cattails now, it's all you see where they're growing because they're taking over, and it just doesn't leave anything else room for other things, and it doesn't provide the kind of good quality habitat that many species are looking for.
That's very interesting. Now, you'd mentioned Wisconsin Wetlands Association, more than a half century old at this point, far older than the Wetlands American Wetlands Month, and older than the North American Wetlands Conservation Act, which I believe was made into law in 1989. What did that law do for our wetlands, Katie?
There are so many different laws, and I'm going to tell you, Lee, that's not my area of expertise, but I will say that we have a great policy staff here at the Wisconsin Wetlands Association who would be able to answer that question in a heartbeat, and I'm just going to have to bring them on next time so that they can do that.
I appreciate that. Go ahead.
But I will say that it has been great over the 50 plus years of our organization to see more wetland protection laws and promotion funding for wetlands and wetland restoration. That's wonderful, and we support all of that. And we support wetland regulations, and we also are really doing more work now to promote voluntary wetland protection and restoration, not because there's anything wrong with regulations, but because they are more subject to be able to change. We've had some dramatic changes at the federal level to federal wetland protections. Happily, here in Wisconsin, that has less of an impact because we have strong state level protections that sort of cover us. There's many states in the nation that don't have those state level protections. So when federal level protections change, they lose all of their protections. So in Wisconsin, we've done a great job making sure that we have those. But nobody likes being told what to do.
Sure.
And so our approach is to try to figure out what are the things that this community cares about, and how can wetlands help them accomplish those things? What does this individual landowner care about? How does a wetland help them accomplish that thing?
And that's kind of why I was asking, Katie, is because there is a timeline here where the Wisconsin Wetlands Association was around before American Wetlands Month, was around before the North American Wetlands Conservation Act. But at least earlier this spring, there were announcements that there were plans to limit federal protections of wetlands. And there was some concern about how this would affect wetlands in Wisconsin, but it sounds like Wisconsin has stayed ahead of the game. Can they stay ahead of any rollback of federal protections?
Well, that is the goal. Mm-hmm. And yes, there have been numerous rollbacks to wetland protections at the federal level over the last 20 years. And each of them, you know, each time there's a Supreme Court decision or some changes at the federal level with the agency, with the EPA, that has ripple down effects. And we don't have control over that. That's happening outside our state. And so having our own state protections just gives us the power to do what's right and to protect those. And it is concerning to see what's happening at the federal level and what the ripple down effects will be, because the funding that comes through a lot of those sources will have an effect on state agencies, maybe on the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. Everybody's waiting to find out, because not all of that is clear yet. But it is worrisome, and that's one of the reasons that we really work on not only keeping those protections where we need them, but also implementing programs where people can invest voluntarily in doing the right thing and not be told what to do by the regulation.
Katie Belfis is the Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, as this is American Wetlands Month. But Katie, I'd like you to, if you would, put on your, look through your silver ball, and if you were to, crystal ball, and if you were to share with us what would change in Wisconsin with fewer wetlands across the state, what would our state look like?
I don't even need a crystal ball to answer that question, because we've already seen the impacts of what wetland loss, what happens when we lose wetlands. We have lost half of our wetlands in Wisconsin.
Wow.
And when you sort of line up the map of where the wetland loss has occurred and where we have water quality challenges, there's a really tight alignment, because when we lose wetlands, we lose the piece of our landscape that helps us process water, both quantity and quality of water. And so we already are seeing the impacts of that. We are seeing areas with a lot more erosion and downcutting of streams. We're seeing areas with a lot more high nutrients in the water and lots of invasive species coming in. So we already know what that means, and losing more wetlands would make that worse. I will say the rate of wetland loss in Wisconsin is really small now compared to what it was historically. And that's why we also spend a lot of our time talking about restoring wetlands, putting back some of that half of our wetlands that were removed mostly by agriculture and development. We need agriculture. We need communities and cities. But we also need wetlands, and so we need to find that balance and the place where we can restore wetlands to bring back some of the, address some of the challenges that have come up because we lost our wetlands.
one of the stories that I keep seeing crop up is about flooding in Wisconsin and how we are seeing the sorts of 100-year floods happen more frequently than every 100 years. And I wonder what the connection might be between that and our wetlands in the state.
Really great connection, really, really important connection. And yes, you're right, these huge floods are coming. They're bigger because of climate change, and we can't stop that. I mean, there's things we can do, but that's a whole other conversation.
We could.
I mean, there are certain impacts that are already upon us. And so we also then have to look and see what can we do to manage the fact that these huge storms are coming and all this flooding is happening. And we are doing a lot of work, particularly up in the Lake Superior Basin, although the work we're doing, we're designing so that it can be exported anywhere in the state, is really looking at assessing watersheds to find where wetland loss has occurred and where wetland restoration could be strategically done in order to have the greatest impact downstream, putting wetlands back on the landscape to be there to absorb more of the water when it falls so that the plug that comes down after a big storm gets spread out over time rather than coming in all at once.
Yes, we take a look at wetlands loss in Wisconsin. You talk about wetlands restoration in Wisconsin. Is there any impetus for wetlands creation? Can we just create wetlands, or is it once they're gone, they're pretty much gone?
Well, that's a really interesting question. Wetlands develop in places where the conditions are right for it, where nature needs a water management system. And so we can restore wetlands. We can restore areas of land that used to be wetlands and then were drained or something else happened, and we want to restore them there. Mother Nature put them there to begin with, so we know it's a good place for a wetland to be restored to. Creating wetlands in a place where they didn't exist historically is a little more problematic. There are times when it's really important because it's going to accomplish a very specific goal. But in general, we advocate for looking at where wetlands used to be historically and doing the restoration there, because the conditions were already right there at a certain time because Mother Nature created them there.
Let's get to your questions next with our guest, Katie Belfis from the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. Our phone number is 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email talk@wpr.org. Anne in Manitowoc, we'll go to you next. Good afternoon.
Thank you, Katie, for all your information. And my question is about the ash tree die-offs. It seems that so many ash trees are bordering on wetlands, and just if you have a comment about the dying ash trees, how that will impact the wetlands, and if there's anything that can be done by people who have property on wetlands that are going to try and replace some trees. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Anne. I appreciate the questions. Katie?
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Anne. And the ash tree die-offs are really unfortunate, right? This is primarily driven by emerald ash borer, which is an insect that comes in and sickens the trees, and the trees die over time. And it is, many ash trees do grow in wetlands and have some pretty significant cultural uses as well. So it's not only an ecological challenge, it's also a cultural challenge as well. But that is still to be determined. People all over the state are trying to figure out what to do and how to replace those trees with something other than ash, partly because the wetlands function differently when there's trees that can uptake and process all that water. You end up with a lot more water generally in areas that used to have trees when the trees are dead, and that's problematic. But you also have habitat shifts and changes. That is a still to be determined thing. There are many other wetland tree species that you can consider as a landowner, planting in an area where you have lost, where you've lost your ash. And I think we always like to stress a three-step approach for any landowner. Learning what your wetland used to look like and how it used to function historically, understanding the changes that have happened in the landscape around you, both within and around and up, especially upstream of where your property is, and then how you can try to get some of the processes back that were there historically that were messed up by the changes in a modern context. You're not going to get rid of the road that changed, you know, how the water flew, what you used to flow through your system now goes through a culvert. You can't get rid of the road, but how can you help the hydrology there? So really understanding it historically and trying to get the processes back that were in existence then.
Katie Belfis, our guest, and it is American Wetlands Month in May, and Katie's the Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. What questions do you have about the wetlands near you? Join us at 1-800-642-1234 or talk at WPR.org. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today, and this is The Larry Mueller Show. Coming up tomorrow on The Larry Mueller Show, consumer protection, taking a look at the latest scams making their way across Wisconsin with Michael Domke and Michelle Reinen from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, otherwise known as DATCAP. And we'll also find out how we can best separate facts from misinformation. We'll talk to an associate professor of the media from UW-Eau Claire about how we can figure out what is actually happening and what folks want us to think is happening. That's tomorrow on The Larry Mueller Show from 11 to 1. But right now, our guest, Katie Belfis, Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. And Katie, there is a series of new videos that are highlighting the wetland and watershed conservation work of our Wisconsin tribes. Tell us about this series.
Yeah, this has been such a fun project to work on over the last few years. We understand, our executive director here at the Wetlands Association has worked with tribes for his entire career and knows that they have seen how they've been leaders in conservation in other parts of the country and wanted to see the same thing here. It's happening, but people don't know the stories because the tribes are small, the reservations are small. So we started a couple of years ago collaborating with them to produce short videos. We're talking about 3 to 6 minutes long, very short, nice videos that just talk about the work that they're doing, whether it's restoration, as was the case with the Oneida Nation, or if it's protection and looking at the watershed health, as was the case with the Red Cliff up on Lake Superior. And the most recent, the latest release was from the Lacoutere tribe, which is in the Hayward area near the Chippewa flowage. And it's the story of their tribe in that area and what happened when the Chippewa flowage was created and then what they're doing in order to recover from that 100-year-ago event that was destructive to their rice beds in particular. So it's a great story of resilience. All of these are great stories of resilience and of the great work that tribes are doing in Wisconsin. So check those out.
What can we learn from our native tribes and their connection to our wetlands in Wisconsin?
I think the core thing that I think we can learn from tribes is that wetland conservation and watershed conservation is not sort of frosting, right? It's core. It's core to the health of our communities. It's core to the health of our human communities and our natural communities. And that we are part of those. Our health is determined and is linked to the health of our natural systems. So we can only maintain our own health and longevity if we take care of the world around us.
We're only as healthy as our wetlands.
Yeah, amen.
Where can we find these videos, Katie?
We have them on our website, wisconsinwetlands.org, or also on our Facebook page. If you look up Wisconsin Wetlands Association, you'll be able to find those out there.
And you'll also get details about tomorrow night's event at the Delta Beer Lab in Madison from 4 to 7, where you can raise a pint for wetlands. And if you miss any of that, you can always go to WPR.org/Larry after the show and get details. Karen wanted to know if programs to restore wetlands lost to farms have been successful in Wisconsin. Katie?
They have been, and there are programs in Wisconsin. Again, these are federal programs that may or may not be losing their funding. We are still waiting to find out. But where they provide some support for landowners who have land that was formerly in agriculture that was wetlands before that they would like to take out of agriculture and restore to wetlands for, as we said, watershed quality and habitat. So those questions have been successful. The one challenge with those is that, of course, they depend on a willing landowner. And so they end up being sort of postage stampy, if you'll allow me the analogy, a little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit there. And that's good. But to be most effective, we need to be very strategic in where we're doing our wetland restoration and working with watersheds and groups of landowners rather than an individual here, an individual there. We should do that. And we need to be doing this more strategic approach as well that gets landowners working together for the health of their watershed.
What got you so passionate about wetlands in Wisconsin?
I had a family that spent a lot of time outdoors when I was young and some high school teachers that were very passionate about conservation and about nature, and it just stuck right with me. I love being outside, and wetlands are beautiful and ever-changing and dynamic and never boring. So it's a really fun, it's a hard job because a lot of people think wetlands are just mosquito-laden infested swamp. But I consider it a personal goal in my life to help bring folks around and see that wetlands are, in fact, treasures that we need to protect, restore, and care for.
Like you have to constantly find yourself making that argument for something that should be obvious if you're always around or outside in those elements.
That's exactly right. And honestly, a lot of folks just haven't really thought about it before.
Right.
And I have an ongoing joke when people say, oh, I'm really swamped, or gosh, I'm bogged down. I say, oh no. Oh, you need a different vernacular for that, because those are all phrases in our language that are derogatory about wetlands and sort of reflect our historic understanding of wetlands. So next time you catch yourself saying swamped, you might say paved over or something else like that. Because we all get overwhelmed, so we need to have terminology, but let's not take it out on our wetlands.
Wow, a new idiom for us from our guest, Katie Belfus from the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. Thank you. As a lover of language, I thank you for that very much. We have taken a look at some of the questions about federal funding for wetlands preservation, but in late March, Governor Tony Evers announced that flood-prone communities could share in about $2 million in grants. The Pre-Disaster Flood Resilience Grant Program, what's it designed to do, Katie?
Yeah, this was such a wonderful thing that happened, and our organization worked really hard to help it happen. We were a champion and worked collaboratively with our legislators to put this together. As we talked about early in the program, we've got communities across Wisconsin challenged with flooding, and we want to help them assess their watersheds, figure out where wetland restoration and stream restoration can help them, and then help them deploy these projects that can help solve these problems. So this was the first round of funding. It's Governor Evers has put it in his budget, his next biennium budget, so that to continue the program, they got twice the number of applications that they could afford to fund. So there's clearly a demand, and we're very excited to see this continue.
So this could just be the start, and there were $2 million, but how many communities will receive this money if it goes through the budget?
Oh, gosh, that's a great question, and my colleague would know that perfectly, and I don't.
That.
I'm so sorry.
I apologize.
There's a nice link on our website that will give you the details, and the Wisconsin Emergency Management is the agency, that's implementing this, and they'll have all the details about which communities were funded, which communities are doing it for assessment purposes, and which are doing it for implementation purposes.
But it does not appear as though this $2 million, were it to go through the budget, would meet the need in Wisconsin.
Correct. I think we have a longer term need, and it's wonderful that it's a growing program. Somebody can assess 1 year and implement another year so that we can actually start seeing change on the landscape.
The Wisconsin Wetlands Association also has wetland coffee break webinars. Again, your waiter is not required, Katie.
That's right. You can do these from the comfort of your own home or even your couch if you want to there. We started this during the pandemic because we all needed ways to stay connected and keep learning about wetlands while we were stuck inside. And they were so popular, we've kept them going. So they happen about every week, and we invite speakers on a variety of topics. They all have to have a wetland connection, but it could be about soils or community types or turtles or insects. We've had all kinds of folks on talking about different wetland related issues. We record them all. You can attend them live, or you can circle back and watch the recording. And we have all of those recordings available on our website. If you just navigate to the Wetland Coffee Break page at wisconsinwetlands.org, you can find a list of all the back programs. It's more than 100 episodes. So they're available to everybody. And we have an index so you can sort of look through the titles and figure out which talks you are interested in and take a peek.
Wisconsinwetlands.org. Katie, got a favorite?
Oh my gosh. That's really hard. There's some great ones on dragonflies and turtles. There's a lot of great ones for private landowners on caring for their property and managing invasive species. So there's really something for everyone. Sometimes they're more lighthearted and sometimes they're more serious. So pick and choose what works for you.
Yeah. And when's the next one?
The next one is I think next week.
Oh,
I got to get ready. We've got two beaver ones coming right up, which I'm very excited about because people always like knowing about beaver. Yeah, next week, May 30th, we have Courtney Dean, who's a graduate student here in Wisconsin and won the student presentation competition at our Wetland Science Conference this year with a talk about her research on beaver. So come take a listen to that. It's about how beaver ponds improve bat habitat.
Oh, an interesting connection, and connected all through our wetlands in Wisconsin. Katie Belfis, what a pleasure, and happy American Wetlands Month.
Same to you, Lee, and same to all the listeners out there. Thanks for loving wetlands, and go out and enjoy them. Get your feet wet.
You bet. Katie Belfis is Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. You don't need to get your feet wet tomorrow if you'd like to tip back a beer with them. They'll be celebrating from 4 to 7 in Madison at the Delta Beer Lab. And again, all their information can be found on their website, wisconsinwetlands.org. You can also go to our webpage at wpr.org/Larry for details and links. And also want to thank our entire team that make this show so much fun and so easy to sit in and fill in for Larry for the day. Producers Claire Neipert and Joel Patnod, technical director extraordinaire Jeff Robbins, and of course, our executive producer who makes it all possible, Jill Nadeau. I'm Lee Rayburn sitting in for Larry today, and you are listening to The Larry Mueller Show.